All right, so this is class, oh. This is class 4 of 4 of discussing Fujita's polishing a tile. His little book on Zazen. But I should mention that next week we will be starting a new class series, and that will be the 10 Fields of Zen, based on my 10 Fields of Zen and the book that I have written and not yet published. Just a note, so that's like we go through all the different aspects of your practice, right? If you ever wondered, you know, kind of, are you doing everything you should be doing, could be doing? Maybe you're new to Zen practice and it seems kind of overwhelming. You got all these, you know, things to read and things to learn and terms to learn and retreats to go to or whatever, you know, trying to get a sense of it all. So I created these 10 fields to give you a sense of, you know, how Zen can permeate all aspects of your life. And this is going to be a very practically oriented class series, right? So it's not going to be about me coming to just, because like, I think the second field is Zazen, and we will just spend 4 weeks talking about Zazen. But I figured we speak about Zazen, making Zazen part of our lives in a very practical way, right? Discussing how do we fold it into our lives? How do we keep a strong Zazen practice? What are ways that can, you know, help you sit at home? Various things like that. So the book is not yet published, but there's links to the Google Docs of the most up-to-date versions, links on the website. All right, so tonight I assigned the reading for tonight, and the topic was Isho Fujita's free translation of Dogen's Zazen Shin, which is one of his essays. So anybody read this and just feel like your brain was being twisted in knots? Anybody read this and thought, yay?
Yeah.
Maybe nobody read it? Well, fortunately, it doesn't matter that much. It is a difficult Dogen fascicle, I think. Just sometimes, it's not something you just read and, you know, sometimes it's very poetic and beautiful and you go, oh, yeah, even though I don't necessarily understand it, this has more of those, like, you know, like a fish is a bird and a bird is a fish and life is a fish and life is a bird, and, you know, like that kind of thing, which makes you kind of go like, ah. But once again, I'm going to do what I did last week, and I pulled up 4 really cool passages I'm going to divide into 4 groups. So who is our host? Tyler's our host. So there'll just be 2 groups, group 1, group 2. And I will send a link in the chat to the page that has the 2 questions on it, so that hopefully at least some of the people in each breakout group will have access to the thing, but hopefully all of you will. So I will message everyone with that link. So that is the link to, there's one says, you know, group, cloud one group is your question, and then, or your paragraph, which I'd like somebody in the group to read it out loud, and then send other way 2 questions. So one person in the group, read it out loud. You'll have some copies to look at. And then whoever's last name is closest to M will be the secretary. The secretary, hopefully it won't take you too long to figure it out, to take notes and then report back to the group when we all come back together. So that secretary, as last time, asked, like, just if you can just listen and not speak, that would be lovely, because then you're really focused on trying to, you know, get down what people are saying. And we'll do that for about 15 minutes. But I wanted to say a few words, hopefully not too long, about some of the koans, which are mentioned in Zazen Shin. So they may or may not come up in your in the question that your group or the paragraph that your group is considering, the questions you're considering. But there are two questions, some are two koans, which almost feels like three, but one was Yao Shan's non-thinking. So this says the main case is when Yao Shan was sitting in meditation, a monastic asked, "What do you think about as you sit in steadfast composure?" Yao Shan said, "I think not thinking." The monastic said, "How do you think not thinking?" Yao Shan said, "Non-thinking." So there's a commentary. This is one of the koans in the book Dogen's 300 Koans. And this is a commentary by John Dido Laurie, which I think is very helpful. He said, "Abide in neither thinking nor not thinking. Thinking is linear and sequential. A separation from the reality that is the subject of thought, and thus is an abstraction rather than the reality itself. Not thinking is suppressive. It cuts away thoughts the moment they arise, making the mind into a great impenetrable mountain, dead and unresponsive. Non-thinking has no such edges. It is the boundless mind of samadhi that neither holds on nor lets go of thoughts. It is the manifestation of the Buddha mind in which the dualism of self and other, thinking and not thinking, dissolves. This is the dharma of thusness that is the right thought of all Buddhas of the 10 directions." So the non-thinking is a Japanese word, hishiryo, which I've heard translated also as "it's not a matter of thinking." So I like that one. another one of the koans is the Nanyue polishes a brick or a tile, right? So Mazu was a big fan of Zazen. He sat in Zazen all day long. So Nanyue went up to him and asked, "Great monastic, what do you intend by doing Zazen?" Mazu said, "I'm intending to be a Buddha." Nanyue picked up a brick and started polishing it. Mazu said, "What are you doing?" Nanyue said, "I am trying to make a mirror." Mazu said, "How can you make a mirror by polishing a brick?" Nanyue said, "How can you become a Buddha by doing Zazen?" So the way that Dogen treats this koan, and really what it may sound straightforward, right? And we're kind of like, ha, you're trying to become a Buddha. Everybody knows Zazen shouldn't be used to become a Buddha. You know, like there's more to it than that. So actually Dogen essentially comes to the point where he's saying more or less like polishing a mirror is the practice, right? Polishing a mirror is it. It's all part of it, more or less. So and then finally, there is a very interesting part of it. So Nanyue and Mazu keep talking. And Mazu says, "What do you mean by that? By how can you become a Buddha by doing Zazen?" Nanyue said, "Think about driving a cart. When it stops moving, do you whip the cart or the horse?" Mazu said, "Nothing." Nanyue said, "Do you want to practice sitting Zen or sitting Buddha? If you understand sitting Zen, you will know that Zen is not about sitting or lying down. If you want to learn sitting Buddha, know that sitting Buddha is without any fixed form. Do not use discrimination in the non-abiding Dharma. If you practice sitting as Buddha, you must kill Buddha. If you are attached to the sitting form, you are not yet mastering the essential principle." Mazu heard this admonition and felt as if he had tasted sweet nectar. So what part of the explanation was that this a cart, an ox, and which do you whip comes from like way back, some old story of a Buddhist nun talking to a ascetic Brahmin who's doing ascetic practices, and the cart is seen as like the body, and the ox is the mind, right? So he's doing all this stuff to his body instead of working on like freeing his mind, right? So he's like whipping the cart instead of whipping the ox. And it, you know, sorry about the whole, you know, violent imagery, you know, you could say whatever, you know, gently coaxing the ox. So we can think of the cart as being the body, the ox as being the mind, but also in Zazen Shin, as Dogen usually does, is he just starts mixing things up. And then, so the cart in some ways can be viewed as like, this is our form of Zazen. And the ox is becoming or verifying Buddha nature, right? The ox is kind of realization. So is kind of Zazen a body practice or a mind practice? So we will hear back from whatever group has that question. So let's do the breakouts for 15 minutes once they begin. So there's two of them, and I'm hoping that people will be able to see which, if they're group one or group two, and maybe Tyler, you can pop into, you know, you can choose one of them, but pop into each group to make sure they know which question they're answering. Oh, there's still two people in. There's still two people in breakout rooms.
Oh, sorry, that's the unassigned Doan and Zendo. I hadn't closed all the rooms.
No. Charles and Ruth Ann are still in room two.
No, but they're still in the participants area.
They are?
Well, I thought they were. Oh, weird. No. How'd they get stuck in there? That's weird.
We were asked to rejoin.
Yeah, I got re-invited to my breakout room somehow.
Yeah. Weird. Okay, I've reclosed them.
All right. Now we're all back. Don't have a lot of time, but I do want to. No, Ruth Ann's still. Well, so we don't have a lot of time, but I want to hear a little bit from each group. So, Cloud Group One, Hugen, would you read your paragraph?
Yes.
Then give us your questions and, like, you know, little something from what you heard.
Okay, the paragraph is questioning and clarifying Zazen from Fujita's free translations of Dogen's Zazen Shin. Zazen is to continue aiming at a dynamic posture. And it is the activity of unending awakening to the reality of life, right here, right now. Therefore, Zazen is the activity of life that is continuously going beyond itself, Kojo in Japanese, and is free with no stagnation. Consequently, if a practitioner is not a low-down fool who can only see what is right in front of them, someone who is content with a casual understanding of Zazen, then they should have the power to dig a little deeper, questioning and clarifying Zazen. It is only natural that there would be this kind of exploration. First question, blabbing about it together doesn't get us far, but at least reminds us not to be content with a casual understanding of Zazen. What does it mean to dig a little deeper, questioning and clarifying Zazen? And once we're done with that question, what insights have you had about the nature of Zazen? We had a lot of comments. I'll try to summarize them quickly in light of the time. Low-down fool hit a resonance with almost everybody in the group. One person said, Soto Zen is a trap for those on the spectrum, undefined, seemingly contradictory. A series of clever little puzzles. It is toying with us. It's compelling in that I see. It is that they didn't understand it, and yet that makes it compelling. It means never giving up, sitting with it, curious. What can I learn from this? What can I learn from this moment and experience? Consciously leaning into the things that you don't like about yourself. To study Zen is to study yourself. Can't leave out what you don't like. Don't become complacent with Zazen. Having to participate with the Sangha is a part of the answer. Part of the answer of digging a little deeper, questioning and clarifying Zazen. One person said they can't do shikantaza. A weight seems to be dragging them around when they get to doing that. Unspecified. So, if you're done with it, what insights have you had about the nature of Zazen? At first, they were impatient for the bell to ring. Then, finally, just gave up being impatient about it and just let it happen. The other people found it helpful to do Zazen without a bell timer. More open-ended, I think, is what they were trying to say. And yet, others said that they do need the framework to maintain their practice. Thank you.
You. All right, go to Jutsundo number one.
This is embarrassing. Hang it up. That's normal. Okay. So, okay, recognizing and understanding. From Isho Fujita's free translation of Dogen's Zazen Shin, if we're stuck on what we see and are caught by our assumptions, regardless of the fact that we are meeting Buddha from morning until evening, we will not be able to recognize Buddha, even though we see Buddha, and we will not be able to understand Buddha either. In the same way, even though we see water, we won't truly know it. Even if we see mountains, we won't be able to truly understand them. Even though the true nature of water and mountains are this and the self are not different, we only look at such things as objects dualistically with our discriminative mind. If you hastily assume that things and phenomena before our eyes are not doorways leading to profound truth, then it isn't possible to say that you are studying the way of Buddha. You mustn't imprudently assume that there's no entryway within the task named polishing a tile into becoming Buddha. Question one, what is your sense of there being an entryway within the task named polishing a tile? Has no one heard me the whole time?
I think you've heard. Read the last line of the paragraph
Okay.
first.
You mustn't imprudently,
Little closer.
what's that? A little closer. You mustn't imprudently assume that there is no entryway within the task named polishing a tile into becoming Buddha. What is your sense of there being an entryway within the task named polishing a tile, Zazen, into becoming Buddha? What is the relationship between Zazen and realization, recognizing and understanding reality? Question two, what sense do you have of doorways leading to profound truth? Has practice helped you recognize them? Which feedback there is here. Okay, so some of the comments made by our group. Somebody said, you can't make yourself into something you are. You you are not, or to become something else, you are already that thing. Don't get stuck on the goal or the end. Expectations on what is a futile task do not apply. Polishing the tile could be an expectation, but that's beyond the point. Someone else said, as they've gone through life and have been attracted to Zazen, but at one point didn't necessarily feel like they were a part of it, but it became more clear to them that through time, that there's a swarm of energy that we just exist in. We can't see it, but because maybe we've become numb to it, but it's there. And with time, this person's seeing that they're more aware of it, and they need something, that there's something that keeps bringing us back to the realization that all that's around us, it's not what we think it is. Another person mentioned trying to keep the awe alive so everything we see, we don't brush aside. We can be in awe of the water, we can be in awe of the mountain, but we're not separate from anything else. We are the water, we are the mountain. Just look at the world with awe. Someone else mentioned people think they need to go somewhere, maybe like a monastery, to have enlightenment, but you don't actually need to go anywhere. It's right there. We miss the forest through the trees if we're so stuck on trying to explain something. The relationship between Zazen and realization. Someone said, you tap into the energy that's always there. The stillness lets you go of the so-called normal analyzing way of being. If you quiet down, you can see what's underneath it. If you just look up at the sky or you look at a tree, it can do something similar as Zazen. And it takes you out of that analytical mind. Someone else mentioned that they were thinking about the in the Bodhisattva vow that the Dharma gates are boundless and we enter them. Does Zazen help you get to that sense of awe and astonishment? And people said, yes, it does. Mm-hmm. In discussing doorways leading to profound truth, one person mentioned that contemplating a koan, specifically when they were riding a bike, that this person was just contemplating it over and over. And that led to a doorway and leading to truth. And it was more of a sense. There wasn't maybe an intellectual answer to the koan, but just contemplating it while doing something, you know, maybe somewhat mindless, that riding the bike activity helped them lead to this feeling, this sense of truth. So it acted like a doorway. Someone else mentioned doing an activity like washing dishes was acting as a doorway. Another person mentioned that there just was a sudden shift. They think maybe it just came with doing practice with time, maybe having a conversation with Domio. That it wasn't a very, they weren't sure of the particular moment, but there was with time a sudden shift that was really important. And people agreed that yes, practice has helped to open those doorways.
Thank you. All right, club group number two.
That's me. I'll read our prompt and then try to summarize what we did. I'm gonna try to do it fast because we're running a long time. Zazen is sitting Buddha. Nangaku teaches further and says, your study of Zazen is, in other words, to study sitting Buddha. By investigating these words, this isn't to memorize words in theory, but to actually practice Zazen with your body and understand by thoroughly experiencing with the body that Zazen is sitting Buddha. We must swallow and digest by clearly mastering the activity, Zazen, which is the core or essence of the successive ancestors. What is this studying Zazen that is referred to here? It is absolutely impossible for this person who is sitting in Zazen with all their body and mind to experience or understand this. But through Nangaku's words, they were able to understand that studying Zazen is no other than studying sitting Buddha. The following is something that we must really understand. The Zazen practiced by someone who has just entered the way of Buddha is the first Zazen. Since the first Zazen is the first sitting Buddha, this means that there is no difference at all between the Zazen of a beginner and that of someone who has been practicing for a long time. And our two questions were, the first, if you have been sitting for a while, how has your Zazen changed over time? What's remained completely the same? And the second, if you're done with number one, if Zazen is sitting Buddha, regardless of your skill, regardless of whether you realize it or not, why study Zazen? What does that mean? We had someone talk about a sense of familiarity when you sit Zazen. And I think I really thought that was beautiful because it's like, for my lens, it's a sense of familiarity with my own body. Like I feel like this is where I get to be inside my body and nothing else. We had someone talk about that this practice is just, it's just that, it's a practice. It's what you do every day. And it's not improving per se, but it's a way of honoring Zen, and specifically sort of honoring this sacred history and lineage of humans that have brought this practice to us. We talked about sort of like physical cues that we kind of return to that are often sort of like the same throughout practice, the way that your body feels, the way that you kind of settle into your posture. We talked about how it takes a while to accept that there's this ebb and flow of practice, that sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not. And then there was a really interesting part where we talked about sometimes Zazen can feel like this moment of stillness, and sometimes it can feel a lot more hectic based on where we are in our lives. So then I'll real briefly do why study. We talked about how it's a different experience every time, right? Like rereading a book. Actually, what was really great is somebody brought up the movie Breakfast Club specifically, which is great because if you watch Breakfast Club as a young kid, you're like, wow, these high schoolers are really cool. If you watch it as a high schooler, you're like, hey, this is feels a lot like what I'm going through. And then if you watch it as an adult, you're like, oh, these poor kids, like they have no idea like what they're doing, right? And so I thought that was a really neat thing is like why study it? Because it has this nuance every time that's different.
Thank you, guys. All right. Dirt two. You mind holding that?
Oh, sure.
Or you could clip it onto your rocket
to reach. Okay. Our paragraph. Is Zazen a practice of body or mind? When Nagaku said, is it right to hit the cart or is it right to hit the ox? He wasn't asking to choose between hitting the cart or hitting the ox, like forcing to choose between A or B. He wasn't asking you to choose which one is correct. No, he was saying that surely it can be hitting the cart as well as hitting the ox. It meant that it is sometimes all right to hit the cart, and it's sometimes all right to hit the ox as well. Does this mean hitting the cart and hitting the ox are the same, or are they not the same? Since a person riding in a cart pulled by an ox is used as a metaphor for sitting Zazen, and person ox cart is seen as one unified whole, Then it is possible to understand this to mean that both hitting the cart and hitting the ox are pointing to practicing Zazen, in which a person is hitting, practicing the ox cart. At the same time, however, we mustn't overlook the difference between them. Hitting the cart is a metaphor of the practice of Zazen, and hitting the ox is a metaphor of the verification of becoming Buddha. The two things are neither one nor two. Question, how is Zazen a practice of body? Hitting the cart in parentheses. How is Zazen a practice of mind? Hitting the ox in parentheses. How is it both? Person, ox, cart as unified whole in parentheses. What use is there in speaking of Zazen as hitting the cart while hitting the ox is verification of becoming Buddha? So one person said, explaining the ox and cart as one unit helps, thinking of it as a whole. Person, ox, cart brought up the question of who, raises the question of who. Zazen is the, oh, one comment was, Zazen is the whole smear. Hitting the cart versus hitting the ox, there's no point in being hostile. Do not beat your head up or beat yourself up. Hitting the cart equals your, focusing on your posture in Zazen. You have to hit both, but different kinds of hitting. The ox equals realization, the cart equals mind. You realize this when the mind and body drop away. This is hitting the ox. I'm sorry, I just wrote these things down.
It's kind of poetic.
So this reminds people that you have a mind and it's not all about the body. Again, the ox equals the mind, the cart equals the body. Who is the person? The person is not the body or the mind, but not doing the hitting. Hitting and practicing is the same. It requires your full attention, and you must, because you must mind the cart and the ox, and that's a lot, because the ox isn't paying attention. If you settle the mind, the body will follow. But this is reversed in this. The cart is following the ox. So if we settle the body, the mind will follow. Zazen with practices, with practice with the body. I'm sorry. Zazen is practice with the body, and practice with the mind is verification of, what was this question? Of becoming a Buddha. It doesn't happen unless you're practicing with both your body and mind. And then one of the last things was someone in control. So intention, and hitting the ox. If you sit with intention of calming the mind, it does not work because you're trying to do something, so you're going to oppose it. So that is not successful.
Yeah. Thank you. So, kind of a take-home message from this, which, you know, that those paragraphs were just a small portion of Dogen's Zazen Shing, which if you're intrigued, I recommend checking out. The take-home message for me is that we should never think we know what Zazen is.
That's it. Waiting faded breath.
You know,
It's good.
if we, yeah, if we, I mean, it's true. Sometimes there is like, I don't know that this, it doesn't feel quite right. I'm really engaged with it, whatever. That's all part of it. But I think it's just as much of a mistake when we go, if anyone does, I got it. I mean, one of the dangers of Soto Zen, right? This whole like, you've already got it. Nothing needs to happen. No gaining idea. Is that you're just gonna not explore the nature of Zazen? Zazen is sitting Buddha. What is that? Who is sitting? Who wants to clear the mind? Who knows that our mind is wandering? Who wants peace? Who, like, you know, it's fascinating, endless adventure, internal adventure. And so we should never just feel like we've got it all set. But hopefully we stay curious, right? That one paragraph that was about, you know, we're not even going to recognize the true nature of mountains and the true nature of self and the connection that we have unless we're able to get out of our dualistic view. I want to keep on leaning into that. All right. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Delmio, and everyone.